Hello, and thank you for joining us. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. On this episode of the Data Book Podcast, we talk with Mark Lieberman, President and Co-Founder of Force Therapeutics. He talks about his company's digital platform to help patients recover from surgery. We discuss Force's work with other health systems, virtual care, health equity, and AI playing a larger role in orthopedic care. He also offers some advice for startup health tech companies. It's a great conversation, so please join us. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. We are talking with Mark Lieberman, the president and co-founder of Force Therapeutics, a musculoskeletal digital care platform. So, Mark, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
My pleasure. Look forward to this.
Well, let's start with a simple one. Just could tell our audience about the company and some of the work that you're doing.
Super. So we're a 12-year-old company based in New York. We have treated over 700,000 patients on the Force platform. We view ourselves as a comprehensive digital platform for recovery from major and minor surgery. Patients are enrolled in Force at the time that they're scheduled for surgery, and we typically manage a patient for 90 to 120 days in the home, although we do collect longitudinal data at 6 months, 1 year, 3 year, and 5 year. And we work with some of the largest hospitals and health systems and ASCs in the country.
I was just curious because you mentioned founding the company over a decade ago. What was the aha moment? What led you to feeling like this was a good solution and a company that could find a niche in the marketplace?
So our CEO and my co-founder, Bronwyn Spira, is a 25-year physical therapist. She ran the Rusk Institute at NYU and found a common challenge with all of her patients, which was no matter how well educated they were in her clinic, and she only had 15 to 20 minutes with them, they didn't often remember what to do when they left the clinic and went home. And she discovered that really 90 to 95% of a patient's success in recovery from a major or minor injury was the work that they did at home. And so the aha moment was, can we, in the early days of the video-based side of Web 2.0, start to include a video-based version of her instructing her patients in what to do when they're not in her clinic? And we found in those early days that patients loved having basically a virtual physical therapist and a virtual doctor available to them. And so that was really the aha moment, which is the patients started to come less to the clinic, spend more time more conveniently in the home doing their virtual PT. And that was really the genesis of the business.
I wonder if you talk more about the virtual PT idea and what makes digital health such an intriguing option for musculoskeletal care, because we've heard a lot about digital health used for primary care and even things like mental health services. But when you're talking about rehab and recovery from surgeries or injuries, how does digital health help those patients?
So everything that we've done to date is around clinically validated digital care plans. And so every exercise has been built by a clinician, or a physical therapist and has been tested in the field with patients to ask the simple question you just asked, which is, if I follow a virtual physical therapy plan, will I get better? And so many of our hospital and health partners have done studies. We've done about 155 clinical trial studies around various modalities of virtual physical therapy and other aspects of the platform. And the key is, are we getting the same or better outcomes? And the answer is we are. So I think one of the interesting, unique parts of musculoskeletal care is that you are doing exercises, and exercises, if filmed properly in the home with the right type of model that feels like it's like you, provides a resource, and it's really easy to follow. And what you used to get was a piece of paper with stick figures with a narrative underneath, and it was impossible to follow. So video and animation have really enhanced the ability to follow a care plan. And then the question becomes, okay, how do you now organize that information on a daily and weekly basis and adjust and modify it as though you were actually with your physical therapist or nurse or navigator helping you through that plan of care?
Is it trickier to do telerehab compared to, say, virtual primary care or other services delivered remotely?
I think it's easier. Yeah. The evidence would say it's a lot easier for the patients.
I could definitely relate when you're talking about the drawings of the stick figures, because as a runner, I'd look at magazine articles and they'd show you sketches of stretching exercises. I could never decipher them or make them work. So I can see how somebody walking you through by video over some rehab exercises would be easier than following the incomprehensible stick figure drawings.
Yeah. And now what's happened is, 10 years later, that's only maybe 5 or 10% of our functionality. So what we learned by having those early cases is there are a ton of needs that patients have when they're in the home. They're anxious. They've just had a major surgery. They're coming off narcotics or opioids that are helping them with pain. They don't remember what the doctor told them. They know it's super important, but they don't remember. And so we have added a layer of care instructions, the ability to communicate back digitally with the care team, get questions answered, be able to collect data on a daily basis, whether it's daily pain or daily steps, providing the care team with a 360 view of that patient so that we can make sure that they get better faster and actually use services less that sometimes are unnecessary. So today's version of Force is comprehensive in the way in which it takes care of a patient. And it lends itself, frankly, to go, well beyond physical therapy.
Does it take time for the clinicians to work with patients effectively in the virtual setting? Because it's not necessarily the same thing as you might be doing face-to-face in an office. Is there a little bit of a learning curve, or is this something that comes pretty quickly?
It is natural for most, but we do a lot of training and implementation and discovery at the beginning, because I would say that the most important part of this journey with a hospital that's been doing the same way of treating for many years is to really help them make that switch over to a digital world. And so, yes, you're absolutely right. It takes training, and it also takes tuning the system to be a complement to their existing way of taking care of patients. And so once they get a hang of it, frankly, it scales them. Doctors will say to me, you make sure that I'm my best self with every patient every day because it's now digital. And so they know they have a lot of confidence that the patient's doing the right things and getting the right information as they're recovering from a major surgery.
Now, I know Force recently announced a new partnership with UConn Health, Connecticut's academic medical center. I was wondering, could you talk about that partnership?
Yeah, it's a really exciting next step in our efforts in New England, which we have many hospital clients. But UConn Health is a great organization. They wanted to use Force to really take care of providing better health equity and access to patients that were having trouble getting into the hospital, had no access to physical therapy, had transportation issues, weren't following a standardized plan of care. They didn't have a great way to collect patient-reported outcomes at a high rate. And so we've become a solution for them to basically modernize all of that patient experience and also provide them with data and analytics to continue to basically optimize what they're doing on a regular basis. And it's an exciting relationship, and it started just to look at the spine population, but it has now evolved into their spine as well as their sports patient population.
I would think it would be appealing for anybody with an injury. Doesn't necessarily probably love getting in a car and having to go 20 minutes to a doctor's office or a rehab center. but especially maybe for some of those older patients where traveling is a little more challenging than maybe it was a few years ago when they were younger, I would think that would probably be something that would be appealing to some of those older patients as well.
It's absolutely appealing to older patients, and older patients are our power users. Some of the first questions we get from a hospital is, yeah, we have a lot of older patients. Are they going to use technology? Actually, they use it religiously and really view it as a resource for them to remember what to do and to go back to and to play videos over and over again until they get it right. They tend to be great patients. But the other piece that you're describing convenience, there's also cost, which is every visit is a copay. And a lot of people struggle with that when you're talking about a 90 or 120 day episode. And so Force is really helping patients make healthcare much more affordable because there aren't those copays associated with their virtual, experience on the platform.
Which again would also have a certain appeal to patients of any economic means, I would expect.
100%. I've seen some studies that say that, an episode can be $800 to $1,000 in copays. That's a lot of money.
I was wondering if you could talk more about health equity, since you mentioned that with the work with UConn Health. And you've already talked about a lot in terms of affordability, but just in terms of access to care, because that's been such a concern for a lot of healthcare leaders now. How do you make sure that that tools are available digitally for all populations? And so it's not just a matter of whether you're in an area with great Wi-Fi or an affluent area, but how do we make sure these tools get out to the people who need them most?
Sure. Well, so it started with mission. Our CEO many years ago really became dedicated to this concept of health equity before I think it was sort of a more of a popular discussion point. And our early days was working with Geisinger Health. Geisinger Health is in a rural part of Pennsylvania. Many of their patients have to drive up to 3 hours to get to the hospital or to a clinician. And so what we were discovering through the data by zip code was that our patients that were farther away from the hospital were using the Force platform even more. A little bit like if you're in the middle of, South Dakota, you might find that people use Amazon even more or tools even more than they do because they don't have the access to some of the stores. So I think that was sort of very teachable for us. What we then discovered as we started moving into other patient communities is that there were new health access issues. So that was a rural one. Then we had the next issue, which is education and language. And so we built the entire platform in Spanish. And then we built subtitling for any language around all the content. And then we thought about what's the best way to communicate? And it's video, it's animation, because you can understand it. It's easier than reading a dense amount of text. And so every piece of content is sort of at a third grade reading level. We have, from a technology access standpoint, thought about making the system incredibly easy to access, but also available ubiquitously on the web, on your mobile phone, on an iPad, and through SMS. And so there's another issue, which is there are people that don't have email addresses. They only have a phone number. So what do you do about that community? So now the platform is accessible through SMS only, and you can actually fill out your forms through SMS exchanges. And so, we're just continuing to sort of block and tackle through health equity and access, because the ultimate goal is to take care of 100% of the patients. And that also starts at the enrollment level, which is we have many ways to get a patient onto Force. And we don't give up just if they get that one first email and they don't log in. We have a whole triage to get them onto Force so that they can actually have access to a system that's going to work for them, no matter who they are.
Well, and you were talking about working with Geisinger, and also I know you've been doing work with, I think, the Marshfield Clinic Health System in Wisconsin. I was wondering if you talk about that work, because I mean that's a system that serves a lot of rural communities. How's that partnership been working for the patients in those communities?
Yeah, it's been working exactly like it's been working at every one of our hospital systems. We did a lot of discovery at the top, listened and learned to their unique approach to care, customized the platform to be delivered the way they wanted it to be delivered to their patients. And it's a stair step. So we've taken on, I believe, the first 10 surgeons at four hospitals. They have 120 surgeons total. So we're in sort of that phase one with the relationship, and then we'll move to phase two, which will be moving outside of the total joint population into spine and sports. Hopefully, like other sort of more mature clients, we'll actually move into their non-operative patient population. And that's a whole other topic, which is how can you use a digital platform like ours to avoid or eliminate surgery? Can you get a patient on way upstream when they're starting to have some kind of MSK issue, but put them on a conservative plan of care so that you can potentially avoid that surgical episode? And for Marshfield and for Geisinger, actually their business is to be an integrated payer and provider system. So they are very excited about the idea of also being able to avoid surgery and reduce cost of care.
Do you run into situations though in rural communities where the connectivity for internet is just even less than you anticipated? I mean, has that posed any headaches for you as you try to go into some of these rural areas?
Yeah, it's definitely an issue. I think we've done a couple of things to make it easier, which is the videos can be cached. And so if you're at home, for example, and your Wi-Fi is strong, you can actually download and store your plan of care. And so that if you move into a low Wi-Fi environment, you're going to be able to still view that video. We've optimized the content so that it's actually, even though very high quality production value, very low bandwidth. And that's another sort of initiative that we have, which is to make sure that the system is available even in low bandwidth environments. But I can't say it's not a challenge in certain communities. And I would hope that our states and federal governments, when they're trying to solve healthcare, are focused on this exact issue and putting in high speed broadband.
Do you see remote patient care, especially enabled by AI, playing a bigger part in orthopedic care in the coming years?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's a hot topic. It's very exciting. And I think, AI is sort of a buzzword, but we think about it as if you're doing a great job at collecting data that you've never had before on your patient, and you have ways through machine learning and algorithms to interpret that data and actually see trends and provide that information back to the doctor, the doctor's going to be able to do better work.
And are you starting to see that now, where like the data you can start interpreting, saying, hey, here's a patient that's maybe more prone to struggle or might be more prone to have a quicker recovery? Are you getting insights like that yet?
Absolutely. Yeah, in spades. We're collecting 11 million data points, I believe, a year, and all of that information is helping us. It's all searchable within our system, and it's helping us create benchmarks, smart alerts, the ability to predict what plan of care will be the best for this patient based upon certain demographic information. So all of it is making healthcare, I think, more intelligent.
Well, it's no secret that the American population is getting older. Do you see, with that aging population, a greater need for musculoskeletal care as well in the coming years?
Yeah, all the data suggests that we're going to see, double-digit growth in total knee replacements, total hip replacements, shoulder replacements. All of that is driven by an aging population that's much more active. And sports injuries are a part of everybody's life, including older patients. So it's remarkable and almost a miracle when you see what a before and after with a knee replacement is. And so I think people are absolutely going and taking those elective surgeries and the time it takes, because it's sort of life-changing for them.
Dramatic increase in quality of life from some of those surgeries.
Dramatic increase in quality of life and mobility and happiness. Yeah.
What advice or insights would you have for hospital systems that are seeing the need to do more to reach their patients remotely, to offer more virtual care options? What can hospitals and health systems do to expand care options for people in the remote area?
Well, one thing I think we're seeing from many hospitals is a flexibility now to think beyond their EMR. And, you know, we have great respect and awe for the big EMRs that have been put in place in hospitals that have transformed the way that they manage patients. But they can't do everything well. And so I think having an open mind to, can an integrated solution for digital care and musculoskeletal care, for example, be a good and better way to take care of the patient? And we're definitely seeing more open-mindedness and a lot more conversations happening around that. And I think it's for the better. So I think that that's, you know, that's something that's shifting, but I think more hospitals need to be thinking about what can we do beyond the EMR to take care of our patients.
Do you sense a greater acceptance of telehealth? I mean, obviously the pandemic really accelerated the use of virtual care, but I know sometimes there's still some leaders that don't seem completely sold on it. Do you feel like there's a greater understanding of the capabilities and potential to treat patients remotely through telehealth and telemedicine?
Yeah, there's no question about it. I think the pendulum swung very far during the pandemic. I think it's come back a bit to what I think is a more normalized go forward approach, which is really the hybrid model. So the hybrid model says there's absolute value to the in-person visit. There's absolute value to having the clinician and the doctor driving diagnosis and prescription and the management of the patient. But there's also value to complement that with digital care resources. So we call ourselves provider-driven virtual care, which is different than removing the doctor entirely from the care experience. We're not believers in that model.
But the provider-driven virtual care, that's the
difference. Provider-driven virtual care. And scale the care team to take care of more patients with a complementary solution like ours to help them, you know, do what they do best, right? To extend their reach rather than replace them.
We've heard often about some smaller digital startups, young companies that have had some challenges these last couple of years in terms of finding funding and just kind of making their way. Now that you've had some success over a decade into your journey, any insights that you could share for some of those startups that are just sort of starting out?
Yeah, so many pieces of advice, but I guess what I would say is make sure that you're focused on proving that your product works, because ultimately, it's the fastest way to get put out of business if your platform's not delivering on its promise. And so I think investing heavily in the product at the beginning is the most important exercise. The second is having really tough first customers that are going to kick the tires and take you to the next level, I think is a really good exercise. And then the third, which I think is the big sustainable model, regardless of whether there's a financial market or not, is make sure you have a business model. You know, I don't think that a lot of these companies are going to survive where they're giving away their solutions for free. And that's because they're not proving that they're going to deliver a lot of value. And so people are skeptical and they're not paying for that work. And that's a fast way to go out. So I think making sure you've got a sustainable business model and you can validate the return on investment I think it's a really important skill set to have early in the development of the business.
Do you think, you talked about investing heavily in the product early on, do you think that's more important than, say, building out the team by bringing in marketing and sales folks and stuff like that? Is that something that should wait till you've got the investment in the product down?
I mean, look, everybody's built their businesses differently, and there are success stories with every model. But if you're asking my opinion, I think it's product first, and then slowly thinking about, you know, sales and marketing. But if you're marketing before you have a great product, you know, you're selling vapor. And, you know, that that wouldn't be a strategy I would deploy.
Well, you obviously seem very enthusiastic about Force's prospects. Where do you see the company being, say, in 3 to 5 years, if you have the crystal ball?
Well, we are very underpenetrated still in musculoskeletal care. There is a lot of white space. And so we're going to stick to our knitting and continue to build more hospital systems, more ASCs, more private practices onto our platform. We're going to grow beyond sports and spine and joints into other specialties within MSK. We will be in the non-operative space more broadly. We already are. And there's certain other service lines within the hospital that are actively looking to deploy our platform in those areas. And so maybe in 3 years and 5 years, you know, you'll see us talking about a broader system than specifically in the MSK space.
So you're very, very optimistic, it seems, going forward.
Well, my optimism in part is that the tailwinds are really strong right now for companies like ours. Regulatory environment is very friendly to encouraging digital care and patient-reported outcomes. There's reimbursement now in place. I think hospitals are out of the pandemic and their businesses are growing, and they're growing, but they don't have the staff to support that growth. And so being sort of prescient about resources, they're thinking about technology as a way to take care of more without adding a lot of additional headcount. So I'm very optimistic about all of that.
All right. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to join us for the conversation today. We've really enjoyed it. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Ron. Yeah, really enjoyed it too. Great questions. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to Databook, a podcast by Chief Healthcare Executive, a brand of MJH Life Sciences. You can subscribe to Databook wherever you get your podcasts. For latest news, insights, and analysis of the healthcare industry, visit chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and X, the platform formerly known as Twitter. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Take care.